This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
My advice to the incoming presidents of the U.S. on how they can regain dominance in Africa is, as much as they're investing in people, investing in the AFCFTA, initiatives like AGOA, Prosper Africa, to name a few, we need to see more infrastructure projects.
That's Wafai Samuel, Acting Director General of the Nigerian American Chamber of Commerce, on the U.S. election as well as expectations on U.S.-Africa policy. Details coming up. Also, Dai Bing, China's Deputy Permanent Representative to the U.N., says that external armed forces and mercenaries should withdraw from Libya as soon as possible. And the U.N. says more than 1 billion people are living in acute poverty across the globe. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story, the impeachment trial of Kenya's Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua was thrown into disarray today after his lawyer said he had fallen ill and was in the hospital. I asked VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo a little while ago to brief us on the latest.
Well, Yahias, Kenya's embattled Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua is reportedly at the hospital. This comes obviously as he was scheduled to testify today on his own impeachment trial around 2:30 p.m. local time. I have to say, at first, they didn't know where he was. The Senate Speaker was asking where he was because they had basically suspended the proceedings and said that they would resume at 2:30 and that when they came, they were expecting the DP to testify. So when he was asking where is he, I think even his lawyers did not know where he was at first. And then later on, and when time was ticking, they said that he had fallen ill. So, after that, I think they kind of consulted with each other, both sides, and then decided that the proceedings will actually resume around 5 p.m. local time, which is just around now, when the speaker said that, the chamber will come back and they do expect the DP to take the stand, because as he said, this is, quote, a time-bound process. It is so ordered, meaning that they have to actually go on with the proceedings.
So Mariama Gachagua has denied all the charges and no criminal proceedings have been launched against him. But with this impeachment thing, he will, what, automatically be removed from office if the Senate approves his impeachment?
Well, I actually asked that question today to an analyst, this governance and analyst and lawyer. I asked him that same question. What is going to happen? That, once they vote to impeach him, they do need a 2-3rd majority in order to remove him. But he said that if that's approved, yes, he will immediately be removed from his functions. I think the president will have to submit another name, another official to possibly replace Gachagua. But he will have to submit that to Parliament. And I think Parliament has, 40 to 60 days maybe to approve it. But what the analyst told me was also the fact that the Senate, Parliament is actually having a sitting, I think, on Friday. So it's possible that if they're able to vote on this today and get it done, the president might nominate somebody right away, and that they might actually, the chamber might decide, yes, they can either approve it or not approve it, but they are trying to do it. They could try to do it before next Tuesday, because Monday is officially a holiday. But at the same time, I think the analyst also said that Gachagua does have, the right to go back to the courts and maybe try to appeal some of the decisions. But that could take a longer process.
Would this be the first deputy president to be ousted in this manner since impeachment was introduced in Kenya?
And it is historic because I think the constitution was changed. Being able to actually impeach a government official was introduced in the constitution. But nobody, they've been able, actually for that reason, because it was new in the constitution, they've been able to impeach governors and other people, but never really at the level of the DP or the president. But it is in the constitution, actually, that anybody, any official who don't feel like they're doing the job the way that they're supposed to do can be impeached. So, but this is the first time for a DP, for sure, in Kenya. It's historic.
VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Maria Madialo, she talked to me from the Kenyan capital. This just in, Reuters News reports that Kenya's Senate will proceed with impeachment hearings against Deputy President Gachagua. It will hold a vote on whether to dismiss him on today, despite his absence from the proceedings, after his lawyer said he had fallen ill. Dai Bing, China's deputy permanent representative to the United Nations, says that external armed forces and mercenaries should withdraw from Libya as soon as possible. He made the comments at the recent Security Council briefing on the UN support mission in Libya. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi what's behind China's position.
I think China has looked at Libya. It's seen Libya as a strategic country in the Middle East and North Africa. It borders the Mediterranean and Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, Niger, and Chad. So what China is trying to do here is to act as a neutral arbiter in the crisis, because this mission has been going on for a long time. And ever since Gaddafi left, there doesn't really seem to be any kind of stability. China wants to place itself as aloof, separate from Russia and UAE and Egypt, which have been backing Haftar and the Libyan National Army, and the United States, Turkey, Italy, that have been backing the government of national unity. China wants to appear to be removed from all these foreign players meddling in Libyan internal affairs, and also to leverage its position internationally as a peacemaker, as an alternative voice to American hegemony and to European dominance of the Mediterranean and, you know, the affairs of the Middle East and North Africa. So it's a diplomatic element there. There's a political element, but there's also a strategic element. And as we know, China's a permanent member of the Security Council. So nothing can happen if China vetoes the UN mission in Libya. And I think that's another variant of this crisis that we should also be thinking about.
But in the realm of competing with Western forces and countries like the United States, they are called on the international community to continue to support efforts to seek African solutions to African problems and promote a political settlement to the Libyan issue. What do you make of that?
This is another play, diplomatic language of Russia, United States, back off Libya, that this is an African country. And really, the AU should be in the forefront of resolving these conflicts diplomatically. I think the challenge, as much as African, you know, solutions for African problems sounds lofty and sounds ideal, in practice, the reality is very different. The AU is largely funded by foreign donors. Ethiopia, where the AU is headquartered, is mired in its own internal civil war. There's a weakness and division among, you know, African leaders on their policy on a range of crises, including Libya. So it becomes very easy for foreign actors. So as much as China says that this should be an AU solution, I think even the Chinese themselves know that the AU does not have the military capacity to intervene in Libya. But I think in saying that, that there should be African solutions to African problems, the underlying theme there is foreign actors need to get out of Libya. And I think this is a message to the United States, to U.S. hegemony in the Mediterranean and in Libya in the post-Gaddafi dispensation, but also to other regional players like Turkey, like Egypt, and also like Russia, which have backed different factions in this crisis. And it really doesn't seem to be ending anytime soon, the problems in Libya.
The Chinese ambassador also called on all Libyan parties to put the interest of the country and people first, remain rational and restrained, continue to strictly comply with the ceasefire agreement. Is that feasible?
It will really depend on whether the Libyan leaders decide they want to continue to get the backing and support of foreign actors who are supporting the different factions. But I don't see the Libyan government or the different factions in Libya rejecting any kind of aid from the foreign actors. I think ultimately the crisis will have to be sorted out in some kind of compromise between the LNA and the government of national unity. China really insisting that Libyan leaders really need to put the country at heart. Sounds idealistic, sounds like the right thing to do, but what China's advocating is good for the diplomatic front, but I'm skeptical about whether it will work in practice on the ground. So it seems like this faction of division will continue in Libya for a long time to come.
And that was David Manda, professor of political science at City University of New York. He was speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shenawi. More than 1 billion people are living in acute poverty across the globe. The French news agency AFP quoted a United Nations Development Programme report that says children account for over half of those affected. The paper, published with the Oxford Poverty and Human Development Initiative, highlights that poverty rates were three times higher in countries at war, as 2023 saw the most conflicts around the globe since the Second World War. The report echoed last year's findings that 1.1 billion out of 6.1 billion people across 110 countries were facing extreme multidimensional poverty. Today's report showed that some 584 million people under 18 were experiencing extreme poverty, accounting for 27.9% of children worldwide, compared with 13.5% of adults. It also showed that 83.2% of the world's poorest people live in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. We'd love to hear from you, and you can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. A federal grand jury in California on Wednesday indicted two men from Sudan for tens of thousands of cyber attacks on businesses, hospitals, and government organizations in the United States and overseas. Ahmed Salah Yusuf Omar and Allah Salah Yusuf Omar were charged in the U.S. District Court in Central California with conspiracy and computer damage caused by the group Anonymous Sudan from 2023 to 2024. The group carried out what are called distributed denial of service attacks to knock targets offline. According to U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, the group and their customers carried out more than 35,000 attacks. The victims included the U.S. Department of Defense, Justice Department, State Department, and companies such as Microsoft and Riot Games. The U.S. Attorney's Office says investigators managed to disable the program that Anonymous Sudan used in its attack earlier this year. A top official of the Nigerian American Chamber of Commerce says the next U.S. president should show a renewed interest in Africa.
Wafai Samuel, the acting director general of the Nigerian-American Chamber of Commerce, says she wants to see more U.S. presence in areas of infrastructure and continuity in the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. She tells reporter Mike Mbonye that this is the only way the U.S. will regain its stature on the continent to counter the Chinese and Russian presence.
But Africa is very key to the world's growth, development, and integration. And America is a friend and ally of Africa. In the last couple of years, we've seen so many countries like Russia, China, etc., expressing interest in Africa. And the opinion of the world is that the U.S. sort of have taken the back step with respect to Africa. So what I expect to see when the next president of the United States is elected is renewed interest in Africa. America has gone as far as creating Prosper Africa, you know, a platform that promotes two-way trade between Nigeria and the U.S., AGOA, AGOA, that's the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which we look forward to having renewed in 2025. AFCFTA is a platform and initiative that the U.S. has supported strongly. So basically, we intend to, I hope to see more of trade between Nigeria and the U.S. I hope to see Nigerians patronizing more of U.S. products, entering into collaborations and partnerships with the U.S. and vice versa.
Russia and China are using the BRICS group to make inroads into Africa. What's your advice to the new president on how the U.S. will regain dominance in Africa?
My advice to the incoming president of the U.S. on how they can regain dominance in Africa is, as much as they're investing in people, investing in the AFCFTA, initiatives like AGOA, Prosper Africa, to name a few, we need to see more infrastructure projects. And the media needs to provide a lot more emphasis on what the U.S. is doing in Nigeria. So, yes, a lot of people have said Russia and China are making, you know, more inward investments into Nigeria, into Africa. But how sustainable are these investments? Are they mostly based off debt and loan? What the U.S. is trying to do is invest more in the people who, in turn, shape their societies. They take ownership. They take ownership of the leadership of their societies and then advance their societies. So the U.S. is clamoring for Africa to have a seat on the table on global institutions, become a voice, even in the UN Security Council. It's China and Russia equally advocating for this for Africa. So you look at U.S., the investments in Africa are long-term, not just short-term.
What has been the contributions of the Chamber to boost trade, commerce between Nigeria and America?
So the Chamber has contributed immensely in 4 years. One, trade services and trade missions. We've had a couple of trade missions to the U.S. in the last couple of years. We've been to Florida seeking businesses to come to Nigeria and trade with us. We've been to Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, and right now we're planning a few trade missions to the U.S. And, of course, we've brought in businesses from the U.S., the state of Illinois, the government of Illinois, Department of Economic and DCEO, Department of Commerce and Economics. So we've done quite a lot. We try as much as we can to impact on trade between Nigeria and the U.S. in four facets. One is networking. We put together capacity building workshops where we get different businesses to come and teach SMEs and MSMEs the things they need to know to grow, hone, sustain, and develop their businesses. And then we also do this by way of offering trade services and trade missions. We've been to the states of Florida, Virginia, Maryland, Washington, D.C., trying to lure in investors to come to Nigeria. Of course, we worked with the state of Illinois, the government of Illinois, through the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, DCEO. We had a trade mission put together, and they were in Nigeria. About 10, 11 companies from the state of Illinois came here. These are just some of the many ways that we try to foster collaborative working relationships between ourselves and the U.S. And in the incoming administration, I look forward to seeing more. I hope that we can do more.
That was Wafai Samuel, Acting Director General, Nigerian American Chamber of Commerce. She spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. Since the U.S. Supreme Court sent the issue of abortion back to the states in 2022, Democrats have mobilized to protect abortion rights, while Republicans have worked to restrict the procedure on religious and moral grounds. The issue is motivating voters to go to the polls this election year. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Jepson has more from Nevada.
This is the next important step for Nevada to protect reproductive freedom and particularly our abortion rights in this state.
Voters here in Nevada aren't just deciding between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris for president. They're also voting on question six.
And we hope we vote yes on six. Thank you.
Laura Campbell is going door to door telling people why she thinks a yes vote on question six is so important. Campbell is the director of the National Organization for Women's Nevada chapter.
Abortion access actually saved my life more than once, and I just think it's important that after Roe v. Wade was overturned, that the state protects us.
But at an anniversary celebration for First Choice Pregnancy Services, a religious nonprofit providing alternatives to abortions, people like Deborah Costello are worried that Question 6 will pass.
The fight can seem overwhelming. Millions and millions of dollars in our state supporting the abortion industry.
Nevadans already voted in 1990 to make abortion legal up to 24 weeks. But Democrats fear a second Trump presidency could overturn those rights, even though Trump says the issue should be left for each state to decide. If Question 6 passes, the existing protections would become part of the state's constitution, making them even more difficult to remove.
We've seen lives are being lost across, 22 states have abortion bans, and we don't want that to happen in Nevada.
Jessica Ponce de Leon is a first-time U.S. voter. She planned to vote yes on Question 6 and for Kamala Harris even before Campbell knocked on her door.
I don't think that the government should have any say over women's bodies or any of that. I definitely feel like women should have total control over their body.
Nevada is one of 10 states this election year to give voters the choice to decide how and when abortion should be legal. In past election years, putting that issue on the ballot has boosted voter turnout and benefited Democratic candidates up and down the ticket. Christian Mersch, a Brazilian immigrant who got pregnant in an abusive relationship and chose to keep her baby, is a board member of Nevada Right to Life.
Without life, there's no liberty, there's no other rights. If you don't respect life, there's going to be racism, human trafficking, and I just feel that we're disposable right now.
While the issue is motivating young voters, first-time voter Emily Costello says minds can be changed, and not all young voters will vote for Democrats.
If you can visually see how destructive that is to just a single human being, that'll change your mind instantly. Instantly.
A nationwide survey released this week by independent health polling source KFF says a growing number of women cite abortion rights as their top issue since Kamala Harris became the Democratic nominee for president. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Las Vegas, Nevada.
VOA. VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Security forces in Mozambique opened fire yesterday to disperse hundreds of supporters of opposition candidate Venancio Mondlane, who claims to have won the presidential election a week ago. According to the French news agency AFP, the number of casualties could not be verified independently, and police did not confirm any injuries. Mondlane and several hundred supporters had marched through the northeastern city of Nampula earlier to protest an announcement by election authorities Monday that the ruling party Frelimo had won the October 9th vote in Nampula's province with 66%. The province, the largest in Mozambique, is an opposition stronghold. Nationwide official results are due October 24th. The Mozambique Attorney General warned Mondlane on Tuesday that claiming victory before official results were announced could incite social unrest and was against the Constitution. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrias Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.